Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. We're coming rain, shine, or anything in between. We're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news that you so love. I am Connor Baltazor. Ace is currently on vacation, so I will be handling this week's weekly recap on my own. It's a pretty busy week for the most part amongst all the major sports, and pretty much all of them had their own ups and downs throughout this week. So I'll just go ahead and get right into this, and we'll go ahead and start with men's basketball that had one of the more up and down weeks, I think, that we've seen from them out of all the sports of this entire week. Just some very high highs, and then, of course, coming off of a very low low to end things. So coming into this week for men's basketball, going back to last Friday when the most recent episode came out, we're coming off of a road loss to Cincinnati, a two-point road loss where we take the lead late and just aren't able to hold on, and then just the thrashing at Allen Fieldhouse against Kansas. So then we come home for senior night against number 6 Iowa State and actually play really well, oddly enough, and really take care of business. This was the best that we had looked in a while, particularly against a good Iowa State team as well. But K-State, I guess, a much, much needed win to just barely keep them in NCAA tournament contention at that point. And they pretty much played themselves back into tournament consideration with this single victory. But I'll go ahead and roll through the stats here. Arthur Kaluma, not sure if he'll be back next year. If I were deciding today, I'd lean towards no. I'd imagine he's going to the NBA. It'd be great to have him back, but I'm not banking on it. He played 37 minutes, went 8 of 12 from the field, made 2 of his 3 three-pointers. Not great at the free throw line for his standards, 5 of 8, so struggled a bit there, but he finishes with 23 points regardless, as well as 7 rebounds. No turnovers, notable. And then 3 steals as well. So really, really, really good game for Arthur Kaluma. And then another guy who we've kind of been waiting on to have a good game for a while. He's been a bit of a slump as of late, but this was his best game in a bit, and that's Cam Carter. And he played 34 minutes and got 21 points in this one on 6 of 13 from the field and 3 of 8 from 3, as well as 6 of 8 at the free throw line. And he added 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 turnovers, and 3 steals of his own to go with Arthur Kaluma's 3 steals. K-State as a team had 11 steals in this game, which is fantastic. But really, really good stuff from Cam Carter. And then the third player in the so-called Big 3 for K-State, Tyler Perry, did not have a great game. Kind of came back to earth from his prior few games against Cincinnati and West Virginia. So 2 of 10, 2 of 8 from 3, a missed free throw in this one, pretty unusual for him, so finishes with just 6 points in this one, 3 rebounds, did have 5 assists but had 6 turnovers as well. That was 40% of K-State's turnovers in this game were from Tyler Perry. He added a steal as well, but not his best work. Jarrell Colbert, he only played 18 minutes while starting, only had 1 field goal attempt and missed it. He didn't score in this one. He had 3 fouls, 2 assists, a turnover, a block, and a steal. No rebounds, though, in 18 minutes. But as I recall, he had a couple of actually pretty good passes that did lead to some big threes. So Jarrell Colbert, it seems like game to game, he's doing a few things well for the most part. He's not had many times where he's put it all together, but he's shown flashes of being able to do a lot of things, just very rarely all at once. I think this offseason's huge for him. I really, really like Jarrell Colbert and his athleticism, but it just remains to be seen what he'll bring to the table in the future. And then Day-Day Ames, the last starter, the true freshman, he played 17 minutes, only took 2 shots. They were both threes, and he missed both of them. He fouled 4 times in just 17 minutes, and then had 4 assists, 3 turnovers, and added 2 steals. Not a banner day for Day-Day Ames, but definitely could have been worse. David Gasson, another guy where it's kind of up in the air on if he'll be back next year or not. He may just be ready to get on with professional basketball. He'll probably play in Europe, I would imagine. If he doesn't get an NBA shot, he's almost certainly going to Europe, and he'll get a shot there. He'll continue to compete with the Danish national team, and he'll continue to do really or the Dutch national team, and he'll continue to do really good things with them. Hopefully he comes back, but if not, he's really come along at the end of this season and been a massive, massive part of this K-State lineup, and playing through injury as well. Now, he played 30 minutes in this one, had 11 points on 4 of 9 from the field, 3 of 4 at the free throw line, really good for him. But the main factor is 16 rebounds and 7 offensive rebounds for him this game. 2 fouls, no assists, a turnover, a couple of blocks, and a steal. Really good stuff from David Gasan in this one. Gets another double-double. He's quietly been putting together a few double-double performances this year. A lot to really like from David Gasan. I really, really hope he comes back. I don't have a prediction like I do with Kaluma. Kaluma, I've just kind of assumed that he's going to the NBA the whole year. Gasan, I'm not really sure what to expect. There's all sorts of reasons for him to do either, but we'll just have to see. Will McNair, he played 22 minutes in this one, 2 of 4 from the field. Those were his 4 points, 2 rebounds, a foul, an assist. Both of his rebounds were offensive rebounds, though, so that's big. And then RJ Jones played 5 minutes, attempted 3 threes in those 5 minutes, didn't make any of them, and recorded no other statistics. So that's just kind of an RJ this year. He'll come in and play a few minutes, take some threes, and sometimes they fall, sometimes they don't. And I'm not really upset with an 0-3 from him. I mean, I prefer for him to, you know, make a few of them, but that's just his role. Just get some open threes up and continue to develop and take a step next year. But K-State played a really good second half in this one. Outscored Iowa State in both halves, actually. But shot 48% from the field in the second half. 40% for the game. 7 to 24 from 3 for the whole game. I made 14 of their 21 free throws. They only turned it over, actually, 15 times is still not very good, but they had 11 steals in this one. They out-rebound Iowa State, 36-27, and they hold Iowa State to 11 points off turnovers to 20, for K-State. K-State got 30 points in the paint in this one as well. Pretty good stuff from K-State, especially against such a quality team. So big, big win for Kansas State on senior night. And that takes them to the Big 12 tournament, where they were the 10 seed going up against the 7 seed and soon to never be seen again, Texas Longhorns. And K-State, this was a must-win game for them. The general consensus was that they even wanted a shot at being considered for the tournament. They needed to get at least a game, but you would ideally like 2. And K-State gets this first game. They were down 10 at halftime. It was not looking good in this one. But K-State came out and played with a purpose in the second half and nearly scored 50 in the second half, outscoring Texas 49-35 in the second half, holding off a very, very late rally from mainly Max Asemus, former near K-State commit, who ended up at Texas. But K-State is able to just barely hold them off. Tyler Perry had a great game in this one. 4 of 10 from the field, but 3 of 4 from 3. Made all 10 of his free throw attempts. 4 rebounds, 3 fouls, 2 assists, 4 turnovers. He also blocked a shot, which is a little unusual for him. I don't remember when that happened, actually. But he finishes with 21 points. Was super clutch down the stretch. A couple of those threes were from quite a distance. I think one of them was a 30-footer, if I remember correctly. So he was hitting some huge shots down the stretch. He was not ready for his season to be done. So really good stuff from him. Arthur Kaluma, in 37 minutes, kind of inefficient, 5 of 16 from the field, didn't make any of his 4 three-point attempts, and then went 4-5 at the free throw line. So he gets to double figures of 14 points, albeit not the most efficient way to get there. Does kind of flirt with a double-double, gets 8 rebounds in this one, and finished with 2 fouls, 2 assists, and a blocked shot. Cam Carter had an okay day. Not great scoring wise. Did keep the turnovers down. Just had 10 points, 7 rebounds, 2 5 from the field, 1 of 2 from 3. Made 5 of his 6 free throws. Then had 3 fouls, 2 assists, 2 turnovers. So nothing crazy there. But Day Day Ames was kind of the story of this game among the starters. And that's even factoring in a pretty poor first half where he just didn't really do anything, caused some miscues early, and we didn't see much of him for a while. But he ended up playing 29 minutes, which is the most that he had played in any conference game this year. And he goes 4 of 9 from the field, 2 of 3 from 3. He finishes with 10 points, and that's 2 rebounds, 3 assists, and no turnovers. And had a couple of really nice passes, including a really great pick and roll to David Gasan, where he just kind of went down the lane with him parallel and just flicked it over his head. It was kind of reminiscent of some of the pick and rolls that we saw with Marquise Noel and David Gasan last year, particularly later in the season. That was really encouraging, and I was pretty happy with how Day Day played in this game. He was another guy that stepped up along with Tyler Perry to help shoulder some of the burden from this one. But really good stuff from the true freshman. Day Day is stepping up late in his true freshman year, which he struggled quite a bit in non-conference and earlier in conference play. But he has really taken a step with his increase in minutes, and that's been great. But Jarrell Colbert rounds out the starting lineup. 14 points for him, or 14 minutes, I should say. 1 of 1 from the field, 1 of 2 at the free throw line. So he just has 3 points, 2 rebounds, 4 fouls, a couple of turnovers. Not the best game for him. That's just kind of how you're going to roll with Jarrell Colbert. Is some games you're going to get Cincinnati Jarrell Colbert, but sometimes you're going to get 4 fouls and a very quick succession Jarrell Colbert. And you just don't know what you're going to get. But David Gasan, he had a really good game again. 28 minutes, 6 of 7 from the field. 1 of 3 at the free throw line, which would bother me if it was anybody else. But I've kind of come to expect just some volatility there with him. But he finished with 13 points, 6 rebounds, 4 fouls, an assist, a turnover, and a block. Again, he's just doing a lot for K-State and is somebody that we've really been able to rely on to most of the time consistently finish at the rim. Will McNair went 2 of 4 from the field, 0 of 1 from 3. I think it was a late in the shot clock 3, if I remember. Played 14 minutes, and he only had 4 points, 5 rebounds, 2 fouls, an assist, and a steal. And RJ Jones rounded out the rotation for K-State, 8 minutes, 1 of 1 from the field. That was a 3-point attempt, then added a foul and an assist. So he got 3 points off of his performance. It was pretty good, all things considered. He takes one shot, makes his one shot. I can't complain too much about that. He's doing what we're asking. But yeah, first half in this one, not a great start at all. But we shoot 55% from the field in the second half, 75% on our free throws, making 15 of 20. Really, really great stuff. Only 10 turnovers in this game. I don't think we've had a game this year where we've had fewer than 10 turnovers. But if we're going to turn the ball over a lot, 10 turnovers for us is fantastic. That's exactly what we needed. And Texas only had 7 turnovers, and they got 16 points off of turnovers in this one, but we still ended up playing pretty well for the most part, and we were able to contain most of their players. Dylan DeSue picked up some fouls early, and in the second half he got 2 very quick offensive fouls, and that was massive. And Asemus, he put 26 up on us, but he had a few just crazy threes near the end, and kind of tacked on a lot of points towards the end of the game to try and push Texas back into the game. And he really did everything he could, but K-State was able to hold Texas off at the end. So a much-needed victory for the men's basketball team. But unfortunately, that was followed up with a remarkably underwhelming effort from the Wildcats against Iowa State in a rematch of a game that just happened 5 days prior. They lose this one 76-57. Pretty brutal dud to end the year, or at the very least, in the Big 12 tournament. And it now leaves K-State in a pretty precarious position if they want to make the NCAA tournament, at least if you look at the net rankings. Joe Lunardi has K-State, I think right now, we're the top of the next four out. Going into this game, there were a handful of bracketologists that had us in the field. And I think even one or two that had us outside of the last four in. But I'm not holding my breath at this point. We're just going to kind of have to hope that they focus more heavily on our really good wins. And the fact that we have several quad one wins, I think maybe more than every other bubble team. But I'm not super optimistic. It's probably going to be an NIT season for K-State at this point, which is really disappointing. But honestly, about where we expected, I think. If you went back to the beginning of the season and told me we wouldn't have our anticipated sixth man, Quez Glover, or Naquan Tomlin, I think I would have described this team as being like right on the bubble, and that's about where we are right now. Coming into this game, we were the third team out. Yeah, that kind of sounds about right to me. That's not to say that this is okay, because it's not, because we should have higher expectations, but I can't say that, given the makeup of this team, that it's horribly surprising. But I'll get into the stats. I'll try and roll through these ones a little quicker. Tyler Perry, 4 of 7 from the field, 3 of 6 from 3, 7 of 8 at the free throw line. So he finishes with 18 points. Did have 4 turnovers. That was a huge issue for K-State in this one. He turned it over 20 times. And it was really brutal. Iowa State got 23 points off of turnovers in this one. And they just were pretty dominant in that regard. Arthur Kaluma had a pretty dull first half, but kind of played with a bit of a purpose in the second half, particularly early. He finishes with 13 points, 5 of 9 from the field, 1 of 3 from 3, and 2 of 4 at the free throw line. He had 4 turnovers as well. Cam Carter, 2 of 10 from the field, so pretty rough day there. 2 of 4 from 3, actually, which is kind of strange that he shot better from distance than close to the rim. And then 3 of 4 at the free throw line, so he gets 9 points, 5 rebounds. He had 3 turnovers of his own. Day-Day Ames, 2-7 from the field, 1 of 2 from 3, 5 points. And Jarrell Colbert played 13 minutes, did not score in this one. Will McNair, he played pretty well in this game, particularly offensively. Again, he does have some defensive lapses at times. And when he does have a defensive lapse, it's very obvious. That's the most difficult part. But offensively, 5 of 8, 2 of 3 from the free throw line. So he gets 12 points in this one. He had 6 rebounds. He had 4 blocks as well defensively, which hasn't been a huge part of his game this year, but really good stuff from him. David Gasson going 0 for 4 and not scoring in this one was a difficult blow. He got 4 rebounds, 2 assists, but turned it over 3 times. Really, really tough. And then RJ Jones missed a couple of open threes, got an assist, and then Tamont Lindsey played at the very end of the game. But Jerome Tang picked up a technical foul in the first half, trying to energize the team. And it worked for a while. K-State whittled this game down to 1 early in the second half, but then Iowa State went on a like 14-0 run or something crazy like that. And then we try and cut it back and they'd push it out a little bit more. It just continued like that until the game ended. A really, really frustrating performance given the importance of this game. Just brutal stuff. Because we knew that this was the sort of game where if you beat Iowa State again, this probably takes you from wrong side of the bubble to right side of the bubble. And at first, probably some bracketologists would have made us maybe even out of Dayton. But now this is a team that's going to be sitting there probably really sweating come Selection Sunday. which on the day this releases is just a couple days away. But we can't say that we didn't have opportunities to bolster our resume. And we even took some of them. We have some really, really good wins this year, but we didn't take care of business in some of the easier times. We shouldn't be going to overtime with like Oral Roberts, or I think it was like North Alabama. We shouldn't have had as close a game as we did with Bellarmine. We should have been able to hold on against Texas Tech. We shouldn't have lost to TCU at home. We shouldn't have lost Oklahoma State on the road. Stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of situations where we can look back at and say, you know, if this one game had gone a little differently, then maybe we'd be having a different conversation right now. But I can't rewrite history. This team does at times play really well with his back against the wall. But tonight was just not one of those nights. And just a really difficult game, a very physical game, a lot of weird calls and no calls. Felt like, especially early in the first half, they were letting a lot go on Iowa State's end. It ultimately didn't really matter. You know, we lost by almost 20 points, so I don't know if it would have made much of a difference. But it is kind of an interesting theme across basketball in general. And I'm not going to fully unpack this right now, but across both men's and women's basketball, it's pretty interesting to follow teams that kind of make being like a hyper-physical, strong team their identity. If you do that, you can kind of get away with more. And I think that's been pretty apparent with a few teams that K-State has faced this year. And I think on the men's side, that's Iowa State. On the women's side, I think that's Texas. Speaking of the women, we'll go ahead and get into that side of it now. But to wrap up the men, if you had to ask me right now if they're getting in, I don't think they are. Just kind of have to hold out hope that our net ranking is going to get set aside and they're going to say this team has some really good quad one wins and we just sneak in. But I, again, I'm not going to hold my breath. I'll be happy if we get in, but I will not be super surprised if we don't get in. I'll be sad because I do think we have a better resume than a lot of the teams on the bubble right now. We just shouldn't have been in this situation in the first place. So I'll leave it at that. I could probably talk about this for a long time if I wanted to, but I don't have everything in front of me to make like a great bubble argument. And I also just a little bit frustrated with this team because we had many chances to make this season better than it is right now. But it is what it is. We'll move on. But now we move to women's basketball, where they, after thrashing Texas Tech in their final regular season game, they moved into the women's basketball Big 12 tournament, which was played at the T-Mobile Center before the men's tournament began earlier this week. And they started out drawing West Virginia, who we played very recently and went to overtime with in Bramlage. And we got a similarly difficult game this time. And it was really on the back of just two players for West Virginia, J.J. Quinterly and Jordan Harrison. Quinterly had 27 points, was hitting some crazy shots really in the very early parts of the game and near the very end of the game. That was where Quinterly was really doing damage. And Harrison added 16. Those two, yeah, 27 and 16 for those two. The rest of the team, they combined for just 18 points. And they only got 5 points off their bench the entire game. West Virginia relying on a lot from their top two scorers there in this game. But K-State, they played a pretty decent game, all things considered. Really brutal start, but had a good second quarter and had a a good fourth quarter. But the first like 5 minutes of this game were really, really bad. But Ioko Lee played 31 minutes in this one, went 9 of 14 from the field, 4 of 6 at the free throw line, finished with 22 points, added 11 rebounds, so a double-double for Ioko Lee again. 4 fouls, 2 turnovers, 3 block shots, and a steal. So really eventful day for Ioko Lee. Serena Sundell had a very up-and-down game in this one. Played 30 minutes, 6 of 7 from the field. Her lone miss was a 3-point attempt, 2 of 2 at the free throw line. So again, when she's getting to the bucket and getting into the paint, she's scoring. It's pretty easy. However, she also is prone to making mistakes at times. Despite finishing 14 points, she gets 8 assists, which is great, but has 8 turnovers as well, which is, for those keeping track at home, really bad. But Gabby Gregory, she had a pretty solid shooting day. 4-7 from the field, 3-4 from 3. A couple of long ones as well and some key moments in 37 minutes. So she finishes with 11 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists to 3 turnovers. Jalen Glenn played 38 minutes, 3-7 from the field, 0-4 from 3. So all of her misses were 3s. And then 6 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 turnovers, and a steal. Briley Glenn rounds out the starting lineup. 13 minutes, 1 of 3 from the field, 1 of 2 from the free throw line. So just 3 points for her, 2 rebounds, and a steal to go with an assist. But rough day turnover-wise for K-State, although 8 of those 21 did come from Serena Sundell. But we can go to the bench now. Zyna Walker, 2 of 5 from the field, 1 of 2 from 3, finishing with 5 points. She's going to be really good. She already is pretty good. But she was a huge transfer portal get for Jeff Mitty. I've been very, very happy with how she's played this year. A rebound, 2 fouls, an assist, a turnover, and a steal for her. Liza Maupin played 9 minutes and had 2 points, 2 rebounds, 2 fouls. Gisela Sanchez played 5 minutes, made her 1 field goal attempt. It was like a driving layup to the basket through the paint. It was a nice play. She started the layup really far from the basket. I remember it just really stressed me out for some reason. So 2 points for her, 2 rebounds. A turnover, and then Terrence Sides, 12 minutes. No shot attempts in this one, but had a rebound, 2 fouls, 2 assists, and a turnover. So, all in all, pretty good day for K-State. A win in the Big 12 tournament is always good because the K-State women, they're very solidly in the tournament. That was never in question. The big question with them is hosting, and that would go a long, long way to potentially making the second weekend, which K-State women have not done very much. Despite having some incredible teams in their history, they've really had a run of bad luck, stretching back several decades in postseason play, with the exception of the WNIT championship, and I think it was 2006. The second quarter, we shot 72% from the field, fourth quarter, 63%. Really good there. And then in the second half, shot 4 of 7 from 3, 4 of 11 for the game. So did really well late there. 42 points in the paint to 20 for West Virginia. Out-rebounded them 35-21. And we got some of their bigs into foul trouble. And we did turn it over 21 times. West Virginia's guards are very, very annoying defensively, but we were able to do just enough to hold them off and beat a very good West Virginia team. It's a team that's 24-7. They're really good. But K-State moved on to face Texas, and this was another game where we started slow and kind of chipped our way back into it, and at one point we did take the lead in this game late, but we just weren't quite able to do enough. And unfortunately, K-State ends up losing this one, 71-64. Texas hit some tough shots down the stretch, and we just weren't able to do quite enough. Their starters, Madison Booker for Texas, is really good. She finished with 17 points. They just hit some huge threes down the stretch, some contested and one's really difficult result for K-State. Ioko Lee led the way here, 37 minutes, 11 to 17 from the field, 3 of 4 under free throws, 25 points and 10 rebounds for Ayoka Lee. Really, really great stuff. Serena Sundell, 4 of 11 from the field, 4 of 4 at the free throw line, so 12 points in 37 minutes with 4 rebounds, 6 assists, and 6 turnovers. Riley Glenn played 26 minutes in this one at 9 points, 3 of 7 from the field, 1 of 1 at the 3-point line, and 2 of 2 on free throws, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 turnovers, and a steal. Gabby Gregory had a very good game, actually. She played all 40 minutes, 3-5 from the field, 2-4 from 3 for 8 points, 5 assists, 1 turnover, and 3 steals as well. And Jalen Glenn rounded out the starting lineup, 26 points, 2-5 from the field, 1-2 from 3, 5 points, 3 rebounds, an assist, a turnover, and a steal. And then off the bench, Zion Walker was the only player that scored off the bench for K-State, 2-4 from the field, 0-1 from 3, 1-2 on free throws, so 5 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, and 3 turnovers. Gisella Sanchez, she did not score, 2 assists, 2 turnovers, or rebounds. Terrence Sides had a rebound, and Eliza Maupin played 3 minutes and fouled twice. K-State had a really good second quarter in this one. 63% of their shots they made in the second quarter, 7 of 11. And K-State went 9 of 11 in the fourth quarter on free throws and made 5 of 12 from the field. But the first quarter was really brutal for K-State. Another rough start. But won or tied every quarter from there on. But Texas was able to just do enough to hold us off, unfortunately. And we played quite well. Just weren't able to do enough, unfortunately, which is really sad. We did take the lead a handful of times, but then Texas was able to tie it. They made some really tough shots at a few different points. K-State kept hitting some free throws to try and stay in it, but just couldn't quite do enough. Really disappointing. Really wanted to send Texas out with the loss on both the men's and the women's side. Well, just to take the consolation prize of only doing that once. But really tough loss to Texas. They would go on to win the tournament title. They beat Iowa State in their last game. So unfortunate Big 12 tournament ending, but the season is far from over for K-State. Recent bracketology on the women's side would suggest that K-State does have a shot at hosting. There's a few experts that have said that they have moved K-State up onto the 4 line, which a 4 seed or higher does host the first two rounds. So it is kind of a toss-up right now, I would say, on if K-State hosts, which I believe the women's selection show, I think that's Sunday as well. But it's going to be a stressful evening for the K-State women's team and the selection show, albeit for different reasons than for the men's team. Because the men's team is going to be wondering if they're in at all. But the women, they're really wanting to host, because that can really go a long way for making it a little bit further. So hopefully K-State women are able to host a few games. That'd be really awesome. That'd be super fun. I would probably try and make it to at least one, hopefully two. But we'll just have to wait and see on this one. But regardless, really good season so far for K-State. 25-7, 12-5 in Big 12 play. They did stumble a bit down the stretch, but they played really well against Texas. West Virginia is a really tough out, and they did well against them as well. So I'm excited to see what they can do in the tournament. But that takes us to the Bat-Cats now, and they had they've had 4 games since we last spoke about them. They won 3 of those 4, so pretty solid from the Bat-Cats. Only one loss, and that was the middle of the 3 games to Cincinnati. But we'll go ahead and get right into them now. K-State wins the first game. It was one of two memorable games for K-State. Definitely the more memorable of the two, because this game resulted in a no-hitter thrown combined by K-State pitchers Jacob Frost and Jackson Wentworth. Those two got the first nine-inning no-hitter since 1991, I believe. It was the first no-hitter overall since 2017, although that was just a seven-inning one because it was like a blowout. But this was the first nine-inning no-hitter and first combined no-hitter since 1991 for K-State. It was our first in Big 12 play against a conference opponent. So a really, really fantastic pitching performance from Jacob Frost. He went seven innings, 118 pitches. Did allow three base runners, two walks, and a hit by pitch. But had four strikeouts. So of the 25 batters he faced, only a handful made it to base. Really, really incredible stuff. Jackson Wentworth, he went two innings, struck out five. He was just utterly dominant in his outing. Jackson Wentworth out of the bullpen, he's been so, so good throughout the season. But Jacob Frost, he carried the banner really for K-State in this one. And they those base runners that they allowed, they were mostly early, I believe. Yeah, they allowed a reach on a fielding error, a walk, a couple of walks, and a hit by pitch as well. But after the second inning, they had two runners on with one out, Cincinnati did. And then K-State retired every single batter from then on to the very end of the game. So a pretty incredible stretch of allowing nobody after a bit of an inauspicious start, but it was a really good ending and dominance throughout for Jacob Frost. He takes his ERA this year down to 3.37, his whip is a 1.13, 15 strikeouts through 18 and two-thirds for Frost. Really, really good. Really, really, really good stuff from Jacob Frost. I was hoping he'd be able to go the whole way, but 118 pitches after seven innings, it was probably good that he was removed, because it's better to get a combined no-hitter than leave a guy out for too long and potentially get him hurt or just ruin the no-hitter and you pitch this guy extra for no reason. So it was a good choice to do that, even if it was maybe not the the choice that we necessarily wanted, but it's been good for Frost for the most part this year. He was the starter in the loss to Holy Cross, and that was a really rough outing for him. I gave up five earned in just one inning, but outside of that, he's been really good. Outside of that one disaster inning against Holy Cross, he is in his remaining 17 and two-thirds, only allowed two earned runs throughout the entire season. It's just that one inning against Holy Cross where he gave up five. But he pitched five against Georgetown, pitched five against UMass Lowell, gave up one earned in each of those. And since he goes seven innings, doesn't give up anything. So pretty incredible stuff for Jacob Frost. And Jackson Wentworth in his own right, 2.29 ERA right now. Was even better before the last game of the Cincy series, where just kind of had some tough luck late. But a .86 whip is pretty incredible. A lot to really like about those two pitchers for K-State. But on the offensive side, wasn't a super eventful day. Brady Day had a two-run shot in the third inning that scored him and Kalen Culpepper. He went 2-for-4 on the day, as well as drawing another walk. Chuck Ingram just 1-for-5, left 3 on. Kalen Culpepper 1-for-4, drew a walk. Brendan Jones had an 0-for-4 at-bats, but did walk twice. Rafael Pellet's here. He had one hit on two at-bats and then drew two walks. Pelletier's been drawing a lot of walks this year. Then David Bishop had a quality day, two hits in three at-bats. Cole Pepper had a double. Pelletier, he had a solo home run. I think it was off the scoreboard in the sixth inning. David Bishop, he had an RBI on his 2-for-3 day on a sack fly. So good day for him. Brought up three stolen bases as well. A couple of fielding errors from Chuck Ingram and Brady Day. But all things considered, a 4-0 win with 9 hits and a no-hitter, you're not really going to complain about that too much, I don't think. The next day, all the offense that had been left on the field for Cincinnati kind of boiled over in this one. Cincinnati wins this one 11-7, 9 hits. K-State gets 10 hits in this one. Does have an error, but they can't take advantage of 3 errors from Cincinnati. After taking a 2-0 lead early, Cincy in the third inning puts up 6. K-State kind of claws their way back and ends up taking a 7-6 lead. Then Cincinnati scores in the 5th, the 6th, and the 7th. And K-State is not able to put a run across after the 4th inning. So, an unfortunate loss for K-State. Starting pitcher was Josh Wintrob, who was good through 2. We kept the no-hitter streak going for 11 straight innings against them. But Wintrob ends up only going 2 2/3. 5 hits, 6 earned runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, hit a batter, 71 pitches. Adam Arthur came in relief and pitched 2 innings. He's credited with a loss on this one. 2 hits, 3 runs, 2 of them earned, a walk, and a hit by pitch. Preston Martinez came in, pitched an inning with 1 hit, 1 earned run, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts. Cole Weisenbaker pitched 2/3 of an inning, I should say. A hit, an earned run, a walk, and a hit batter. And then Blake Dean came in and pitched 1 2/3, got 3 strikeouts, hit a batter. And then Mason Buss came in and pitched 1 inning and got a strikeout. Mason Buss has been really good this year. He's moved to the bullpen rather than being a starter like we tried to use him as a few times last year in his true freshman season, but now he's a true sophomore. And he's working out the bullpen. You haven't seen a ton of him so far this year, but he's been good. Chuck Ingram in this one, he leads off again. He's been doing decently in that spot, going 1-for-5, though. Not the best day for him. Brendan Jones went 1-for-2 with 2 RBI and 3 walks and stole a bag as well. Then Caitlin Culpepper, 1-for-5, another rough day for him. Brady Day, 1-for-3. But 2 walks. Nick English, 2-for-5. No strikeouts in this one. Got 3 RBIs. He had a double as well. Kyne Lotis, he was in the starting lineup as a designated hitter in this one. And he went 2-for-2. Actually, I think he may have... or he was pinch hit 4. My mistake. Jaden Lobliner pinch hit 4 and went 0-for-2. Daniel Rivera went 0-for-3 with 2 walks. And Rafael Pelletier, 1-for-2. With a double and 3 walks of his own. And David Bishop, he went 1-for-4, a couple of strikeouts. Mason Schwalbach pinch hit for him and struck out. So the Bat-Cats strand 11 on base in this one. They walk 10 times, strike out 7 times. And again, they did all their scoring early in this one. Scored a couple of runs on a Brendan Jones single in the second inning. Kyne Lotis got a sack fly in the 3rd. Daniel Rivera scored a run on a drop fly ball from him where Nick English scored. Then Nick English in the 4th inning, he doubled and scored 3, but was out at 3rd, and then it was all Cincinnati from there. So decent effort, but just not enough from K-State. And that takes us to the dramatic final game of the series, where Cincinnati came out guns blazing. This one, 4 runs in the first inning. K-State counters with 4 runs of their own in the bottom of the 1st. Then we get a couple scoreless. Cincinnati puts up 1. Takes a 5-4 lead. They eventually take a 7-4 lead, and we get two back. They put up two more. We get one back. They put up two more. Then we get three. Then we get one, and we tie it, and it goes to extras all the way to 12 innings in this one, where Cincinnati puts up two in the 12th, and then we put up three to walk it off. And what ended up being kind of a classic game. This was the one game I was able to make out of this series. I was very happy that I was able to, because I ended up getting to see a great baseball game. 39 hits in this game, 27 combined runs. K-State walks off Cincinnati, winning 14-13 in this one. Pretty incredible stuff. This scoring summary takes up pretty much my entire monitor. But Owen Borma got the start in this one, and unfortunately, he just was off his game. I think may have still been reeling a bit from the start against Tennessee, where he really got blown up in that third inning. But this was a pretty brutal outing for him. He only made it through an inning, gave up 6 hits, 4 earned, 2 walks, no strikeouts, which is unusual for him, and hit a couple batters as well. He faced 12 in the first inning and put up 45 pitches. Really, really tough for Owen Borma, who last year was an all-Big 12 pitcher for K-State. He's got people thinking that he's not good, which I know is not true. He's just kind of in a slump right now. I think this upcoming weekend he's scheduled to be our Sunday guy again, which this will be the first time he's pitched with a full week's rest in a little while, so that may end up helping him. But, yeah, that first inning, K-State was down 4-0 pretty early. But then I'll go ahead and go through the batting order now. Chuck Ingram, he batted 7 times in this game. He went 3-for-7, scored 4 runs, and had an RBI. Didn't leave anybody on either. He added a home run as well in this one, and was just really, really good. Brendan Jones, he went 2-for-5 in this one, 3 RBI, a walk and a strikeout. He added a sac fly too, and then also had a double and a home run of his own, which he put up in the 12th inning to tie the game. Chuck Ingram reached, and then Brendan sent it over the right field fence. But that was massive, and that, because that tied the game to where we'd at least see a 13th inning. But we obviously won in that inning. Kalen Culpepper, he went 3-for-5 in this one, and added 2 walks as well, and continued to do his thing. I'm only struck out once, added an RBI. Brady Day, he went 3-for-6 in this one, 3 RBI, 1 walk. 1 strikeout. He had a home run too, in the first inning. Yeah, this scoring summary is so long, it's tough to see where people actually did things. But Brady Day, he got a 2-run homer that scored Kalen Culpepper to make it a 4-3 game for K-State in the first inning. Nick English, the true freshman, went 3-for-7. In this one with 2 RBI, stranded 2, but of course he was credited with the walk-off in this one. He's a right-handed batter, but he went opposite field. He just had a kind of a poke single that he just poked past the first baseman, who was shifted over just enough, and he sent it down the right field line to score Kalen Culpepper. And the true freshman, he's really been great for K-State. He's played some right field. He was the designated hitter today, but Nick English, as a true freshman, listed as, like, I think, right field slash catcher, I think, is his official position. He's been really good for K-State. Hopefully the next great baseball player named Nick from the Kansas side of the Kansas City Metro for the K-State baseball team. Very specific set of circumstances for him, but he does match it. Kyan Lotus, he went only 1-for-5 in this one with a walk, but he had a very impactful 1-for-5. He had a solo home run on a 3-2 count in the bottom of the ninth to tie it at 11-all. And he, down in right field, he was talking with some fan before the game, said that he owed him a home run. And he waited a little while, but he got it all the way in the bottom of the ninth and was able to keep the game going just a little longer. Jaden Loebliner played first base in this one rather than his normal designated hitter role. Went 1-for-5 with an RBI and a strikeout. So not the greatest day ever for Jaden Loebliner. But his hit was a single to right in the first inning, scoring Nick English to tie it at 4-all. And then David Bishop, he came in and went 1-for-1. And he reached in one of the extra innings. He didn't end up scoring, though. Then Jaden Parsons pinch ran for him and played first. Jaden Parsons did steal second base as well at one point. Rafael Pelletier went 1-for-5 with a couple strikeouts and did draw another walk. And he also scored, did Rafael Pelletier, which I can't even find where he did that. There's just so many lines, but Pelletier scored at one point. Daniel Rivera played third and went 1-for-6, so not the best day for him. Added a strikeout, but he did score as well. So, and he scored in the bottom of the eighth on a Culpepper single. And Pelletier also scored in the bottom of the eighth, I'm now seeing. But that takes all of the hitters in this one. 19 hits for K-State, 6 walks, just 7 strikeouts, 52 at-bats for the Batcats in this one. Home runs from Chuck Ingram, Brendan Jones, Brady Day, Kyan Lotus. A couple of doubles from Nick English. Brendan Jones had a double. Jaden Parsons stole a base. Just really, really, really great hitting for K-State in this one. Then getting down to the pitching. Borma, we already talked about him. He had a rough start. Then Jackson Wentworth came in out of the pen, and he at one point just threw the brakes on a bases loaded, nobody out situation. Cincinnati in the second inning, they loaded the bases on Owen Borma before he could record an out, and we went to Wentworth, and then Jackson Wentworth came in and got 3 straight strikeouts. Just absolutely clutch from Wentworth. He has been one of the stories of the season so far for K-State. The bullpen has struggled, and the pitching staff at time has had a really rough outings, but Wentworth has been one of the very few consistent good things about this K-State team. And as long as Tyson Nabors isn't pitching, if we can have a guy like Jackson Wentworth come in and just dominate, we're going to do really well. He went 3 1/3, 3 hits, 3 earned runs, all of those coming at the end after 3 really solid innings, 2 walks and 5 strikeouts. He threw 53 pitches in this one. Then Blake Dean came in, didn't have a fantastic outing, went 2 2/3, 7 hits, 4 earned runs, a wild pitch as well. Not the best day for Blake Dean, no walks or strikeouts, 43 pitches. But somebody that did have a really good day that I kind of didn't even notice in the moment, just because of how quiet it was. He just kind of went about his business and just calmed the waters, and I hardly noticed. And I don't mean that as a sign of disrespect. That just means that he just went about his business and just did it. That's Mason Buss. He went 4 innings, threw 61 pitches, just 2 hits and 3 walks. Brown in 3 strikeouts as well, not a single earned run in that time frame. And Andrew Evans comes in and pitches the last inning. He gets credit with the win in this one. Lucky him. He gets to snipe that away from Mason Buss. He goes 1 inning, 2 hits, 2 earned runs, and 3 strikeouts in his 5 batters that he faced. He gave up a home run, but still ends up getting credit with the win. So, good for him. I mean, it was a back-and-forth game. Not a lot of good pitching in this one, but K-State was able to just pull off the win at the end in a classic. And then K-State, one more game, faced South Dakota State this past Wednesday in what was a game that started off in kind of horrifying fashion. Seemed like we might be in for a long one. We saw James Guyette get his first start as a Wildcat and not record a single out, unfortunately. We've seen him pitch in relief a few times to varying degrees of success. I think he could be a good pitcher, but it just was not his day. Two hits, four earned runs, one walk, one hit by pitch in zero innings. Gave up a grand slam, just threw 17 pitches in this one. Really, really tough outing. So he got pulled before recording an out. And then we saw Andrew Evans come in and just completely shut it down. He gave up one solo home run, two hits, had four strikeouts, 59 pitches, and 4 2/3. So Andrew Evans, he gets credit with the win for this one, which, yeah, in his case, they did win 16-5 in this one. So South Dakota State, they scored 5 runs in the first 3 innings and did not score again after that. K-State, they countered with 3 of their own in the bottom of the first and absolutely exploded in the bottom of the second inning for 11 runs. So K-State, after starting out down 4-0, by the time we hit the third inning, they were up 14-4. So K-State took what could have been a long day and very quickly turned it into a great thing for them. So a great great start to the game, great response to kind of getting punched in the mouth early. Other pitchers from this game, Adam Arthur pitched 1 1/3, only 9 pitches in this one, and 4 batters faced, a couple flyouts, a couple groundouts, nothing crazy from him. Preston Martinez went 1 inning, 1 hit, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts though, and 22 pitches. Preston Martinez is an arm that I find very intriguing. I think he could really, if he is able to put it all together for K-State this year, I think he could be a very valuable bullpen piece down the stretch. J.J. Slack, this is the first that we saw of him all year. 1 inning pitched, 1 strikeout, and then a really great pick on a ground out right back at him. Just really good defensive reaction time. Slack's an interesting pitcher. We hadn't seen him all year this year. But he was really throwing quite well, looked really comfortable, was starting out in the high 80s, but after a few pitches, he only threw 15, but after he got through about 6 or 7, he was hitting 93 on his fastball, which I thought was really interesting. But he threw one really quality inning. And Sam Roberts, we haven't seen him for a while, but he comes in, throws 1 inning, and gets 3 strikeouts and 13 pitches, just to slam the door shut on any hopes that South Dakota State may have had. But Chuck Ingram started out the scoring for this one for K-State. He was just off of a cycle in this one. I think he just needed a double, which is not the one that people normally need. Normally it's a triple that people don't have, but he was just a double away in this one. But he goes 3 for 4, 3 runs, 3 RBIs, and draws a walk as well. Really great day for Chuck Ingram. He hit a just destructive home run to begin this one. Went, I think, almost 470 feet to left. And it was, I think, about 116 off the bat. The K-State Baseball Analytics account was not tweeting during this game, unfortunately. But that's what the broadcast said. And I trust Brian Smoller, so I think you should too. But first inning as well, Brady Day, he grounded out to first base unassisted, scoring Brendan Jones, and then a Nick English ground out scored Culpepper to get it to 4-3. But moving down the starting lineup, I'll just go down the order here. Caden Carl, he pinch hit for Chuck Ingram, and played center instead of left. He walked once and scored a run. Brendan Jones, he was playing center to start with, went 2 for 3, 3 runs, 1 RBI, a walk, and a strikeout. So good day for Brendan Jones. He added a double. He stole a bag as well. He also got hit by a pitch. So good day for Brendan Jones. Carson Queck, he pinch hit for him and then played left. So he and Caden Carl swapped places defensively with where Ingram and Jones were. But Queck, he got his first collegiate hit. I believe he's a true sophomore at this point. Played some last year and got on base a few times, but didn't actually record a hit, which I did not realize. But Quek, a very highly regarded recruit out of high school, and has all of the physical tools. And if he puts it all together, then I think he could be somebody that starts to play even more. I was actually a little bit surprised that we haven't seen more of him already this year. I think next year he's going to be a big factor for this K-State lineup. But so he goes 1-for-1. This one, Kalen Culpepper, 0-for-2, but draws 4 walks in this one. Scores 2 runs, leaves 3 on, strikes out a couple of times. Then Brady Day, 1-for-3, 4 RBI, and 2 walks. Busy day for Brady. He also had a great defensive play as well. He had a double, but he did get picked off once as well. But Brady Day, he kind of had a basket catch in shallow right, just in front of Kyan Lotus. But it was a fantastic grab by Day. And then Jaden Loebliner pinch hit for him. And then move to first. He drew a walk. Got a lot of walks in this game for K-State. Nick English was the designated hitter. 0-for-3. Drew a walk. Left 2 on. Scored a run. And then Mason Schwalbach pinch hit for him. 0-for-2 with a strikeout. Kyan Lotus played right field in this one. We've been seeing a little bit more of him after the middle part of this weekend. 3-for-6 with 2 RBIs, 2 strikeouts. Left 3 on. Scored a run. Daniel Rivera, 1-for-3 with an RBI. Jaden Parsons, he went 2-for-2 in this game, recording his first hits as a Wildcat. Although one of those, he tried to advance it to second and was tagged out, what ended up being a little bit closer than I thought it would be. But he recorded his first hit at K-State, the grad transfer. And then Raphael Pelletier only saw the plate twice. He didn't actually record an at-bat because he walked 2 times, scored 2 runs. Then Caden Phillips pinch hit for him, went 0-for-3. Had a couple of well-hit balls, but just weren't able to get out of the park. Struck out once. Then David Bishop, he went 2-for-5 with an RBI. A strikeout, scored 2 runs. Again, doubles for Brendan Jones, Brady Day, Kyan Lotus. 2 triples on the day for Chuck Ingram, 1 for David Bishop. And of course, Chuck Ingram had the leadoff mammoth home run. Ingram, Brendan Jones, and Kalen Culpepper all stole bases. Brendan Jones was hit by pitch as well. Again, we had that massive second inning. A walk, single, score on a pass ball, base clearing triple, another passed ball, and then a double. And if you go and look at the score chart for this second inning, I don't think there was a single earned run in this entire inning. In fact, if you go down and look at South Dakota State, they have a pitcher, Will Kent, who had gave up 8 runs in this game. Not a single one was earned. Walked 5 batters, hit a batter, gave up 5 hits, 8 runs given up, 48 pitches, and 2/3 of an inning. Not a single earned run in this one. So pretty awful outing that's not going to hurt his ERA, but pretty brutal nonetheless. But this was outside of the very beginning of this game. This was a dominant game for K-State. Saw some guys that we don't always get to see, but it's been fairly decent for K-State thus far. There's been guys I'd like to see more of, guys like Mason Buss, maybe a JJ Slack. Now he had a pretty solid outing. I'd like to see what he could do against some other teams of higher competition. Andrew Evans, he's been a little volatile. He has given up 4 home runs in just 14 1/3. So 9 earned runs in that time, but 14 strikeouts to 1 walk. Andrew Evans kind of feels like the ultimate K-State pitcher in that regard. 1.05 whip in that time, but a 5.65 ERA. So a lot to like about him. Needs a little bit more refinement. But then you go and look at your guys like Jackson Wentworth with 2.29, Jacob Frost with 3.37. There's been some really quality pitching in some spots, but the issue is consistency. And there's guys that just haven't been able to do everything we need them to do. I believe Josh Winthrop is getting the Friday start for the upcoming weekend series against Missouri State, which that's a huge series. Missouri State is a quality team. And that's a series that we need to be able to take. But we'll be seeing, I think, Winthrop and then Frost and then Borma in that order this weekend. But hitting-wise, there's been some good performances so far this year. I'm just kind of going through some of our season stats thus far. Brady Day, he's hitting .381 so far. 1.227 OPS, which is nuts. Caelan Culpepper, though, what's so impressive about him is that he's only hitting .284 right now. Despite that, his OPS is a .974. Caelan Culpepper is doing pretty incredible things while striking out more than he should be, but his on-base percentage is a .422 despite striking out 16 times in 16 games, only having 19 hits, probably not having the batting season that he wanted to, but he's reaching base a lot. When he reaches base, he does a lot, and that there's a lot to be said about that. But Brady Day leads the team in RBIs right now at 27. His on-base is .513. Just absolutely nuts stuff from Brady Day. We're very, very lucky that he came back. Chuck Ingram doing great stuff as well, hitting .356. Brandon Jones is hitting .328. He's got 22 walks on the year thus far. How about Rafael Pelletier, who's only hitting .268, so not the best. Only 11 hits in 41 at-bats, but he's walked 20 times this year. So Pelletier on a .268 batting average has an OPS over 1,000 at 1.020 with a .508 on base percentage. So he's getting on base 50.8% of the time. Really great stuff. This team is doing great in terms of drawing walks and getting on base. We just need to get a little bit better bringing him home. Our situational hitting needs to be a little bit better. But we're getting guys in the right spots a lot of times. So the pitching needs to be a bit better. Our situational hitting needs to be a bit better. But despite all that, we're in a decent spot right now. I would have liked if we could have picked up just one more game, whether that had been one of the Cincinnati games this weekend or California or Arizona State or one of the Holy Cross games. I feel a little bit better if we'd done that. But we're in a decent spot right now. Missouri State's a big series. Wichita State's coming up next Tuesday. And then we get our first Big 12 road series against Houston. March 22nd through 24th. But the immediate worry is Missouri State. It's been a decent year so far. Up and down for baseball. But we kind of come to expect that, and baseball is an up and down sport. You know, just some days aren't your day. But that really brings this episode to a close. Pretty eventful week. March is one of the busiest months of the entire year for sports, and there were some ups and downs for K-State in every sport this past week, but they had some really good moments as well. Even though basketball for the men is looking like they're going to have a tough time making the tournament. Had a huge upset win over Iowa State and a big win over Texas. The women's team for basketball looking more likely than not, still not 100%, but at least, more than 50% chance that they'll host. And they had a good win over West Virginia. And the baseball team goes 3-for-4, with all three of their wins being entertaining in some fashion, whether that be a no-hitter, a classic back-and-forth brawl that goes to extra innings, or just a fun blowout victory where we get to watch our favorite players just beat up on a team that they're better than. But that pretty much wraps this one up. If you want to email the show, you can reach us at our email address, aggievillealleycats@gmail.com. If you want to follow me on a more personal note, I am at Connor Balthazar, capital C, capital B. make sure you follow the Aggieville Alley Cats on Twitter. That's at Aggieville ACATS, capital A, capital A, and capital C. And if you are liking the show, if you want to support us, we have our merch store online. Our link is in our Twitter bio for that. We've got some really nice designs in there, like the Established Alley Cats, Shame Could Have Happened to Anybody, and a few others. That's really good stuff. I have a couple shirts that I wear all the time. But most importantly, thank you for listening to this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast, where come rain, shine, or anything in between, we're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news that you so love. Stay safe, Alley Cats.